Happy Wednesday, everybody. Today is January 20th, 2021, and welcome to Today in Sports History, the podcast that will make you the most interesting person at the water cooler, guaranteed. I want to thank Laura Robin for filling in yesterday, and just to let you all know that we've decided to have her do at least one episode a week. Without any further ado, let's get started. In 1883, Bill Barnes gets a hat trick in the England versus Australia match at the Melbourne Cricket Grounds. In 1910, the Ottawa Senators outclassed the Edmonton Hockey Club 13-7 for a 2-0 sweep of the Challenge Series in the Stanley Cup playoffs. In 1950, Leon Hart from the University of Notre Dame is picked first overall by the Detroit Lions in the NFL draft. 1952, the NBA's first superstar, George McCann, scores a career-high 61 points, leading the Minneapolis Lakers to a 91-81 double overtime victory over the Rochester Royals. In 1967, the Philadelphia 76ers center, Wilt Chamberlain, makes all 15 of his field goal attempts in a 119-108 win over the Los Angeles Lakers. It's an NBA record for consecutive shots made. In 1968, the U.S. Female Figure Skating Championships was won by Peggy Fleming. Also in 1968, the hits keep on coming for the UCLA Bruins basketball team as the Houston Cougars beat the Bruins 71-69 to win the basketball game of the century and end UCLA's 47-game win streak. 1971, Arj Shek skates a world record 1,000-meter in 1 minute and 18 seconds. In 1974, Essex Community College beats Englewood Cliffs 210-67 in a basketball match. In 1980, President Jimmy Carter announces the U.S. will boycott the Olympics taking place in Moscow. In 1982, future Hockey Hall of Famer Daryl Sittler is traded by the Toronto Maple Leafs to the Philadelphia Flyers in exchange for Rich Costello, a second-round draft pick, and future considerations. In 1987, the United Kingdom police decide that they are going to crack down on soccer hooligans in the biggest operation against violence around football stadiums, thus ending some of the greatest moments in soccer history. In 1989, Pittsburgh center Mario Lemieux becomes just the second player in NHL history to score 50 goals in less than 50 games. Goal number 50 came in the 44th game, a game between the Penguins and the Winnipeg Jets, where the Penguins lost 7-3. 1992, Score begins selling international soccer cards. In 1995, the 94-95 NHL season begins after a lengthy strike. And in 2007, Utah Jazz coach Jerry Sloan passes Larry Brown for fourth on the NBA's all-time win list with 1,010 wins after the Jazz beat the Chicago Bulls 95-85 at the United Center. And we'll be right back with our deep dive segment. Thanks for sticking around and welcome to our deep dive segment. Today we'll be looking at one of the peak points of the Cold War, the day Jimmy Carter announced that the United States would not be participating in the Moscow Olympics. The 1980 Summer Olympics boycott was one part of a number of actions initiated by the United States to protest the Soviet Union invasion of Afghanistan. The Soviet Union, which hosted the 1980 Summer Olympics and its allies, would later boycott the 1984 Summer Olympics in Los Angeles. The Western governments first considered the idea of boycotting the Moscow 1980 Summer Olympics in response to the situation in Afghanistan at the December 20, 1979 meeting of NATO representatives. The idea was not completely new to the world, since 1975-76 proposals for an Olympic boycott circulated widely among human rights activists and groups as a sanction for Soviet violations of human rights. At that moment, not many of the member governments were interested in the proposal. The idea began to gain popularity in early January 1980 when Soviet dissident Andrei Sakharov called for a boycott. On January 14, 1980, the Carter administration joined Sakharov's appeal and set a deadline by which the Soviet Union must pull out of Afghanistan or face its consequences, including an international boycott of the Games. On January 26th, the Canadian Prime Minister Joe Clark announced that Canada, like the United States, would boycott the Olympic Games if Soviet forces did not leave Afghanistan by February 20th. Jimmy Carter also proposed moving the Olympics to Greece on a permanent basis to eliminate the issue of politicization of the Games hosting, but the IOC rejected the idea. When the deadline passed a month later without any change to the situation in Central Asia, Carter pushed U.S. allies to pull their Olympic teams from the upcoming Games. In late January, the Soviet regime prepared to face down this, quote, hostile campaign. As Central Committee documents show, in addition to its own propaganda efforts, it was relying on International Olympic Committee and its 89 members to behave as in the past, after the Soviet invasion of Hungary in 1956 and Czechoslovakia in 1968. Those member committees did join, and not give in to the pressure from national governments. It noted that the government and the National Olympic Committee of France had already stated a willingness to participate. After its April 4th meeting, the head of the United States Olympic Committee, Robert Kane, told the International Olympic Committee that the United States Olympic Committee would be willing to send a team to Moscow if there were a, quote, spectacular change in international situation in the coming weeks. In an attempt to save the Games, Lord Killian, then president of the IOC, arranged to meet and discuss the boycott with Jimmy Carter and Soviet General Secretary Leon Brezhnev before the new May 24th deadline. Killian insisted that the Games should continue as scheduled, while President Carter reaffirmed the U.S. position to boycott the Games unless the USSR withdrew from Afghanistan. Several interventions at the late 1980s Bilderberg meeting in Aachen included discussions of the implications of the boycott. It was argued that the world would perceive a boycott as little more than a sentimental protest, not a strategic act. An African representative at the Bilderberg meeting voiced a different view. Whether there was additional support outside the U.S. or not, he believed a boycott would be an effective symbolic protest and be dramatically visible to those within the Soviet Union. Some Russian dissidents expressed an opinion that a boycott would be a strong message to Soviets who breached the Olympic rules, used state-sponsored doping and professional athletes, despite the fact the rules of the time only allowed for amateurs, to achieve their political goals. The Carter administration brought considerable pressure to bear on other NATO member states to support the boycott. Their support was not universal. The International Olympic Federations protested that the pressures by the U.S. and other supporting countries for the boycott were an inappropriate means to achieve a political end, and the victims of this action would be the athletes. West German Chancellor Helmut Schmidt said that the American attitude that the Allies should, quote, simply do as they are told, end quote, was unacceptable, although West Germany did join the boycott. Boxer Muhammad Ali traveled to Tanzania, Nigeria, and Senegal to convince their leaders to join the boycott. He also successfully convinced the Kenyan government to do so. Many countries ultimately joined the United States in a full boycott of the Games. These included Japan and West Germany, where Chancellor Schmidt was able to convince the National Olympic Committee to support the boycott. China, the Philippines, Chile, Argentina, and Canada also boycotted the Games entirely. Some of these countries competed at the alternative Liberty Bell Classic, or Olympic Boycott Games, held in Philadelphia that same year. The governments of the United Kingdom, France, and Australia supported the boycott, but left any final decision over the participation of their country's athletes to their respective NOCs and the decision of their individual athletes. The United Kingdom and France sent a much smaller athletic delegation than would have originally been possible. The British associations that govern equestrian, sports, hockey, and yachting completely boycotted the 1980 Summer Olympics. Spain, Italy, Sweden, Iceland, and Finland were other principal nations representing Western Europe at the Games. Of these, Spain and Italy participated under a neutral flag with the Olympic anthem played in any ceremony. Italian athletes serving in its military could not attend the Games because of the national government's official support of the boycott. Many events were affected by the loss of participants, and some U.S.-born athletes who were citizens of other countries, such as Italy and Australia, did compete in Moscow. a firm enemy of the United States under Ayatollah Khomeini's new theocracy, Iran also boycotted the Moscow Games after Khomeini joined the condemnation by the United States and the Islamic Conference of the invasion of Afghanistan. Independently of the United States, the Islamic Conference urged a boycott of Moscow after the invasion. The Ayatollah, meanwhile, accused Moscow of arming the Baluchis against his regime. Lord Killian permitted NOC-qualified athletes to compete at the Games without their national flag or anthems, which allowed NOCs to send athletes in a non-national context. But this did not allow other individuals lacking NOC sanctions to participate in the Games, as this was perceived by the IOC as a potential weakening of their authority. Four competitors, including one athlete from New Zealand, competed independently and marched under their NOC flag because the government officially supported the boycott. The athletes of 16 countries did not fly their national flags. Instead, Olympic flags were raised and the Olympic anthem replaced their national anthems at medal ceremonies. There was one award ceremony where three Olympic flags were raised, that being the men's individual pursuit in cycling. We want to thank you for joining us in this episode and hope to have you back for many more. Please don't forget to subscribe however you're listening to us, whether it be Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or Spotify. And like us on all social media, at Sport History Pod. Again, that's at Sport History Pod. Thank you to Jason Shaw at Audionautics for the introduction music, and Laura Robin, our script editor and director. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time.